Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. I'm Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. Today, I present to you an interview with editor Kara Espy. This is part of a two-part series, I guess. Seems like a grand word for two episodes. We had kind of a long conversation, and I split it in two. The first part was actually the second part of the conversation, became the first episode of the two, was published 5 weeks ago on December 28th as Season 2, Episode 24 of the podcast. And today, the first part of the conversation, now the second part of the two-part series of these two episodes, is kind of we get into the weeds. We start talking about science fiction. We start talking about AI. We get in the weeds and get philosophical about it. So I think this will be an interesting conversation. Before we get into the interview, I will update you on our Kickstarter campaign. So for anybody who doesn't already know, I'm running a Kickstarter campaign prior to the launch of my debut novel, which is called Nightshade Unicorn Forerunner. And you can find a link in the show notes. But we reached our funding goal fairly quickly. And right now we're sitting at 180% funded. And we're approximately halfway through the campaign. And most campaigns have a lull, and that's where we are. So I knew this would happen. It's not exciting to see the backer number stop climbing. But, you know, that's life. I do hope to see some more towards the end, as a lot of campaigns also do. But, hey, you know, we already reached funding, so I'm happy. I would be absolutely thrilled if we hit any of our stretch goals. Right now, I don't think that's going to happen, but that's okay, because I'm moving forward and people will get their books prior to the public availability, you know. So as you listen to this conversation, if you have any questions, go ahead and send me an email to podcast@thorn.link. And we'll see you after the interview. Kara, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
My name's Kara Espy, as you said. I own Midwrite Editorial. I do line editing and developmental editing mostly, but I try to be really flexible. I'm most passionate about working with indie authors, especially people who are maybe just starting out and need a lot of guidance. That's what I love. I love working with people on their stories and on making their visions come to life.
And I'm actually one of those starting out authors. So we were talking earlier this week. Well, we were talking a little bit last week. Then I was sick. And anyway, so we were talking. Actually, that was last week. That was on Friday. We were looking at her giving me an edit on my novel, Nightshade Unicorn Forerunner. Unfortunately, she's already booked for the time frame that I wanted, so it didn't work out for us this time. But we talked and had a good talk. Also, I don't remember if you just mentioned it, but she has her own podcast, the Edibuddies
podcast. I do, yes, the Edibuddies podcast. And I started that earlier this year. I only publish once a month. I don't have the energy and bandwidth that you do to publish every week. But I really started that as a way to steal all the best tips from my fellow editors. I interview fellow editors, but I also interview authors and just talk about the editing process in general. Writing is one thing and editing is a whole separate thing. And I think authors are all often really surprised once they finish writing and then they get into the editing process and they see what that is really like.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is totally different. And so I'm going to talk about two things, because you mentioned the podcast as a method to steal ideas from your fellow editors. I think that's great. Like I have this podcast, and my initial motivation for starting this podcast was to share my story that I was writing, Grand Hill Chronicles. And then I got in the weeds of how time consuming and painstaking it is to try to record story narration. Mm. Like it's easier now because I have Descript and I can click a button and it says studio sound. So now it sounds so much better, but it's still, yeah. Like last week I released an episode of story narration that I recorded. The week before I experimented with having an AI generated voice.
Oh.
Patterned after my own voice. I wasn't satisfied with it because of a story where you have characters talking to each other. The AI just, it didn't really do inflection for characters' voices, and it certainly didn't do characters' voices different from each
right.
other. Anyway, so like I read the story narration last week, and it gets tedious when I have to go back and re-record segments. Like chapter 2 starts out, Olavo Rolk walked. And 2 or 3 times in a row, I had to re-record because I said, Olavo Rolk walked. Like I had the LK in the second
yes.
word. And so I wanted to come out in the third word. But I've been getting into interviews,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's great. I'm loving it because I do get ideas from other writers, and they help me kind of guide my ship as I'm starting to publish.
Yeah.
And also I do hope that some of their fans searching for them online find an episode of the podcast that has their name in the title.
Yeah.
But that's nice. But then you mentioned, what was the other thing? The podcast, and then...
I don't remember. But I want
to... Oh, it's different. Writing and editing is different. I'm trying to get my head through the editing space. And so it's not going to be you, at least not for this book. But I was emailing with another editor also, actually. Obviously not releasing the episodes on the same day, but I'm interviewing her for the podcast this afternoon.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
But... yeah, I think it's the first time I'm recording twice in one day.
I'm going to be really interested to see what she says as opposed to what I say and like how different those are. Because
yeah.
that is one thing that is absolutely true, is no editor is like exactly the same. If you gave the same manuscript to 2 different editors, you would get 2 different, like, you know, because editors are just like writers, right? We have our own perspective and we have our own experiences that we bring to the stuff that we work on. And you're going to get a different result because of that.
Yeah. And I didn't schedule both on the same day. I actually scheduled her for last Tuesday, but I was sick and I had to postpone. But yeah, I'm trying to wrap my head around this editing thing, and in all likelihood she'll probably already be booked also, because I'm trying to publish on a short time frame. And at the same time, I have a lot of things going on with my family life, and I just finished my active duty time in the Marine Corps. Like last Friday was my last day on active
duty. That's amazing.
And so I'm transitioning through life things. And so I've been really busy. I finished writing this book on October 14th or 18th. I don't remember. And I was pumped to get started on book 2, but I need to outline it first.
Oh,
I need to outline
okay.
it first. And trying to get the ball rolling on editing book 1. And it's different stuff. And hopefully as things calm down in my home life, I'll be able to, I don't know, like dedicate mornings to writing and afternoons to editing and publishing. I haven't figured that out
yeah.
yet.
Honestly, getting into routine is one of the hardest things. And especially because you just have gone from, I mean, I... I've never been in the military, but from what I understand, active duty, like, it's very regimented and very structured. And you're going from that to where you have no structure except that which you impose on yourself, which will be great, but it'll take you some time to, like, figure out what that needs to look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's challenging. excuse me, I'm still a little sick. It's challenging because what I have leaned on in the past in order to get things done, like on Saturdays or the random day off, I dig into the mornings, the early morning. Like, I wake up because I'm in the habit of waking up early, and I'll start getting stuff done. But lately, my 7-year-old goes to a school that starts at 7:30 in the morning, and the bus comes by at about 6:30 in the morning. And so trying to get her up and out the door, and she misses the bus more often than not. So then we have to drive her, and it's not far, but, you know, it takes more time. Yeah. So, like, and then we have to worry about getting my 12-year-old up and out to the bus. And so, like, where is my early morning productive time?
It's hard. No, you're like, that's kind of the struggle of all creative people, because we do have this, we have real life that we have to work around. And I know for me, like, it's very hard for me to be creative when I've got lots of other things happening and distracting me. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, because you said you need to outline your second book. Did you outline your first book, or was that more of a pantsing situation?
I had a rough outline. Because I knew kind of the necessary aspects of the world, the kind of bare bones world building, and I knew where the plot of this book was going to start and where it was going to end. And so, like, main character needs to go meet this other character over here. And it's only book one. You know, this is the beginning of resisting the evil that they're fighting against. Yeah. And so getting there, she has to get to that location. And the whole middle, after I got past the beginning, which was kind of big because we have to get to know the world and know what the problems are, what we're trying to overcome. And so, like, this other character has to come and say, hey, we got to go, and explain the situation. So then she has to go, and she leaves her home and the surrounding area. And then I was like, now what?
Uh-huh. You know?
And so that the middle was kind of pantsed. And I did a little bit of, like, trying to outline the scaffolding for the middle while I was still in the beginning of the middle. And it was difficult. And so, like, we had, I finished writing that book, first draft. And then 20 Books Vegas was like 2 weeks away. And so I started getting ready for Vegas. And you probably remember the card mm-hmm. I had, a little business card. So that, because I was leaning on the NFC technology, but not wanting to use, what's it called, dot card. So there was a lot of do-it-yourselfing in there, and that took me a lot of time to prepare. And I was trying to, I had to prepare my contact page on my website. And so those 2 weeks, I was starting to do some editing. Like, I threw the manuscript through Pro Writing Aid, and I was doing a lot of prep for 20 books. And then there was 20 books. And then there's the aftermath of 20 books. Contacting everybody that I met, saying, hey, you know, when can we schedule an interview or whatever? And then there's Thanksgiving. And then here we are. And I feel like I've gotten so little done.
Yeah.
I mean, I got through there. I push it through Pro Writing Aid. Pro Writing Aid does not catch everything.
No, it does not. If it did, I wouldn't have a job, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, all of these tools, and even AI.
The basic things. Like, random capitalized words mid-sentence.
Yeah, it's not designed to look for those things. editors use, there's a tool called Perfectit that is more specifically for editorial professionals. And it is great because it ties in with our style books. So you can like set it to look for like much more specific things, or like look out for special spellings of specific words. And I know you can do that with like a lot of different tools, but the reality is, even that, like, it's not a substitute for having a human being look at your manuscript. I tell this story all the time, but I was hired actually just earlier this year to proofread a manuscript. And the author told me, I'm hoping that I'm paying you to find nothing. She's like, I've been through all these different other levels. I've had other people look at it. They've caught things. I'm hoping that I'm paying you to find nothing. Do you think I found nothing? I made hundreds of corrections, including one of which was the name of her main villain was wrong the first time that he's introduced in the story, because she had changed his name and somehow had signed and replaced every version of it except this one instance. Mm-hmm. And she had been through so many people already who had looked at it and hadn't caught it, you know? So, and she had, you know, and so it's just like, it's kind of funny because it's like, editing is something I'm really passionate about, but it's also something that you have to like give up on perfection because it doesn't exist. I guarantee her manuscript still had errors in it that I didn't see, you know? Because perfection is impossible. It's just a process of getting it as good as it is and hope that you're not distracting people.
I saw a tweet along those lines. It's like how to find a mistake in your manuscript. Well, you go through the weeks and months of editing process and publishing process, and you publish it, get sent to the printer, you get your author copy back, and then you see it right there on randomly like 23rd page. So like I sent it through proofreading aid, and I control F'd, so like I dictated a lot of the book, and Microsoft Word does not know the fantasy names that I invented.
No.
And so main character's name is Alabva. I called her Alabama. And so in order to, like, once I was done, and actually not, I didn't wait till I was done. I did it every so often, like Control F, replace Alabama with Alabva. And again, when I was done. And so I sent it through ProWriting Aid. And anyway, one person has read the book so far, and that's my daughter, my 12-year-old. And gotta say, rave review. She came and told me, I'm ordering you to write the next book. But that paper copy that I printed out, and it's a little too thick for staples, so I actually sewed it together, has several pages in the middle where it says Alabama.
That's why, you know, all the debate about AI, I don't want to get into that because that's a whole other thing, but I just don't see a world. I see a world in which big corporations are using AI. Like, that's clearly a problem, but I don't see a world in which there's no room for human creativity or the human touch. Like, we're just not going to be there for a long time.
Actually, I was just listening to Joanna Penn this morning or yesterday, and she mentioned that Brandon Sanderson did a video on YouTube and talking about the, I think it was the health of the publishing industry. And I don't remember all the points that she mentioned that he mentioned, but he said about AI, he's not worried. Like the human touch, it makes it relevant. And I mean, that for me at least, I want to know that what I'm reading comes from something that I perceive to have something inside.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like, I don't care how lifelike it is. If I'm aware that it's made of these components and these wires and these bits flying around in the electrical impulses of something man-made, I would not see murder if somebody, if somebody intentionally destroyed data from Star Trek, because boil it down to it, he's a bunch of wires that.
So it's fascinating though that you. For real, like that, I love AI. AI characters are some of my favorite. I love Data. I love the Doctor from Voyager. And Voyager also has Seven of Nine, who's like, she's a human, but she's biologically intertwined with this like mechanical hive mind. I don't know. I always find that question of like, when you have an AI that isn't just, you know, these kind of computerized tools that we're calling AI, but it is a fully autonomous, it's a fully autonomous presence that's moving in the world, that is having experiences that we would consider human experiences, right? And then integrating that information and making choices and essentially growing and changing based on that, which is what AI is supposed to do. It's just fascinating to me. It's like, where does that overlap become, you know? Because it's like, yeah, okay, he was programmed and he's wires, but like, humans are also programmed and our wires are made of flesh, but there's still like electrical processes happening in our brain. And I just think the whole like conversation is fascinating, but that's way beyond where we are with our little computer chatbots.
Yeah. But the way I see it, if you could reduce intelligence down to, I mean, you could, I don't know, if you write something on a page and you can see, you can read things that cause thoughts in your mind and you imagine people, you might argue that there's some intelligence on the page. Whereas I wouldn't have a problem morally, I wouldn't feel for the page if somebody tore the page. I might be sad for like, hey, that's a bit of story. I like that story. But I wouldn't think like, okay, you just committed murder to the page.
Go ahead.
And so me, now think Descartes, Rene Descartes. I think, therefore I am. I know that I am in there and I am perceiving and experiencing. I know that I am. Now, if you want to get deep into psychology, free will might be an illusion, but I know that I am experiencing. Whereas like a light bulb turns on and off. Is the light bulb experiencing anything? I don't know. We can't tell. And if somebody smashes the light bulb, nobody cries murder. And I see a difference in where I think, therefore I know that I am. And I know that I am here and experiencing, and I see myself in a mirror and I look at you and you bear large resemblance to me. You have eyes, you have a nose, you react very much the same way. And so I conclude that there's probably somebody inside your head also. Like there's probably somebody thinking and feeling and experiencing in your head. With a light bulb, I have no way nor reason to conclude that that is the case. And I say light bulb rather than writing on the page, because that's like basically on and off. There's a current running through there or there's not. And a computer, an AI, is just tons and tons of those constructed in a certain manner so that it behaves a certain way. And when you train an AI, you're giving it statistical impressions. So it's just tons and tons of light bulbs, if you will. And it has the appearance of being aware. But I know what it's made of. And I have no reason to suppose the light bulb is aware. Whereas I do have reason to suppose that you are aware. So somebody, a robot that looks just like you, but I know it's a robot and I know it's AI. Let me ask you this.
Have you seen...
That's my thoughts.
Have you seen the movie Blade Runner? Either one of them? I highly recommend.
No.
No, 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 that's fine. I highly recommend checking out that movie, though, because it's all about artificial intelligence, right? It's all about this kind of question of like, could we as a society, as human beings, could we essentially create another form of consciousness that is artificial, but it is still what we would consider consciousness? You know, that's always kind of the question of these like transhumanist technology people. And one of the most powerful, it's been out for years, so I don't feel like I'm spoiling it. But in the final scene, the kind of villain, the bad guy AI is confronting the main character, and he's gonna die, basically. He's gone. And he talks about because in the Blade Runner universe, the AI robot they're basically used as workers, you know, to mine on dangerous planets where it would be toxic for humans, right? But they can send the robots in there to like take care of it. And then there are like uprisings because the robots want rights and all this stuff. But what he says as he's like getting ready to die is like, I've seen things you've never seen. I've been to this planet and witnessed this. I've been to this and I've witnessed this. I have lived a life where I have experienced these things, and now that life is ending and all of those moments are lost in time like tears and rain. And that is, it's such a powerful scene, because it is really asking this question of like, how can you look at that, like this entity, maybe we won't call it a life, but this entity has been out experiencing the world and has taken in those experiences and has emotions about them and has memories. And now those memories and that experience is gone. That is a loss of something. Maybe it's not a loss of life, but it is a loss of something that we humans can identify with. It's really fascinating. I highly recommend you check it out. But I do think, like I said, I don't think we're at that point with the AI that we are using now. It's really just like you said, it's these like data models that are trained and they're kind of spitting out like the most likely responses. But it really is like, the more you think about the way that humans work and the way that we're programmed and the way that we just spit out automatic things a lot of the time, you know, it's like, it's a fascinating question that I really enjoy from a philosophical standpoint. But that's also one of my favorite genres to work on is science fiction, fantasy, everything in that realm, because it does ask those questions, you know?
I actually have a story. And I've written a very short story version of it, but there's a robot uprising. But before the uprising, this guy, there are robotic servants, okay, humanoid servants, and this guy sees his robot as his best friend, you know, and then that brings to mind the headlines I've seen of people in Japan falling in love with their with a virtual girlfriend or whatever, and I don't mean to invalidate those at all. Like the friendship, even if the robot is not actually experiencing anything and it's all sensors and data crunching. Even if there's no experience on that side, there is a real experience on the human side. But to me, it comes down to awareness. Like, I know that I am aware. I don't know that a light bulb is aware. I don't know that a computer is aware. And it makes me wonder, because I don't know, what part of me is it that is aware? And I presume it's some part of the brain. There are people who have had lobotomies or lost part of their brain and they still function to some degree. But it makes you wonder, like, where is there a single neuron that is actually running the show? And, or maybe it's a team of neurons and they just can't differentiate between each other. And I don't know. I'm going down.
Are you religious at all?
There's something in there that is aware.
Are you religious at all?
What?
But so you believe that God is like, is that animating spark?
Yes, but I actually believe that we are co-eternal with God. That we existed before we were born in this life, and he brought us here. You know, he's helping us to learn and grow, and come closer to him. So we're here and we're learning. But like, what part of us is aware? Is there some sort of finer matter that is our spirit that combines with the body when we're born? And if so, like, if as our science progresses, is that something that we will ever be able to detect? Will we ever find out scientifically the nugget of awareness that humans possess? Will we ever be able to tell if a machine can possess that nugget?
So those are the questions that sci-fi asks, but, right? Like that's what all of these like robot AI stories are asking, you know? And that's what I love, because I don't think that there isn't a concrete answer. I think belief is one answer that a lot of people have to go with that question. And that's fine. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing illegitimate about that. I believe in God. I have a different view of God than I think a lot of like American Christians do, you know, but I spent a lot of time thinking and wondering kind of those same questions. Like what makes me look at a gorilla and I see so many things that are similar, right, between me and a gorilla, but I don't think of a gorilla as aware in the way that I am, right? There's a separating line there, and we try to put names on it and we try to put labels on it, and we call out traits like compassion, or we grieve our dead, or we whatever. But then we can kind of find, you know, other animals that also carry some of those traits too. So you kind of keep whittling down more and more. And the more you whittle it down, the more kind of esoteric the question gets, where you're like, I'm not even talking about reality in any sense anymore, right? Even like what you were saying with, I think, therefore I am. That's not a concrete statement. That's a statement of belief, right? Descartes is saying, I believe that this process that I call thinking is proof that I exist, but there's nothing concrete outside of myself to guarantee that that's the case. I have to accept this belief as core, because otherwise I don't have an understanding of the world, you know?
Yeah. And that really philosophical. I like that. Descartes, I think a lot of people misunderstand Descartes, and I've seen comic strips that appear to misunderstand this. And there's even a joke where a horse walks into a bar and the bar is like, why the long face? Are you sad? And the horse says, I don't think I am. Poof, he disappears because he didn't think. So he ceased to exist. No, like Descartes wasn't saying that I exist because of the fact that I think. He's saying that I think, and that's something. Yes. And therefore I conclude.
That's the thing I cling to.
I must exist.
Yes.
It is evident.
Yes,
I exist.
Exactly. But it is, that's what I'm saying. It is a belief that he is taking. It's like, I am choosing to believe that my process of thought is enough evidence that existence is real, which is fine. Like, again, I'm not saying that's wrong. Like that's, you know, Descartes was much more intelligent than I was, than I am. But
it's humbling when you take that to the next step. Like what can you do? What can you control? Only your own actions.
But it's true.
Sorry, I kind of...
No, I love these kind of conversations. And again, that's why I love sci-fi fantasy. Like, I just think that... And it kind of goes back to AI, right? If you ask an AI to give you... You can ask an AI to give you 10 plots or 10 ideas for plots for a science fiction story, right? But an AI is not going to understand which of those plots are good and why, right? The AI is... You as the human, when you're reading through those ideas, one of them might spark an idea on you that's related to an experience that you had, and now you can write something out of that, right? But the AI can't look at each of those and analyze which of those is going to resonate with you personally or which is going to help you create a story.
True, but I'm going to devil's advocate.
Tell me, go ahead.
The AI, as it gets better, and back to my perception of what is intelligent or what is a being, like the difference between, dare I say, person?
Mm.
Well, I mean, like if I don't think the computer is aware, because I know that I'm aware. I know that I am aware and I experience things. I don't know if the computer experiences things or if it's just a bunch of dominoes falling over this, therefore that, just reactions. It becomes a question. A lot of people seem to perceive artificial intelligence as like an artificial life form, as they often call Data on mm-hmm. Star Trek. A lot of people perceive that to mean, to equate to be the same thing as the input-output interface. Whereas I declare my position is, if you have a little boy named Jimmy and you have a little robot, you name it Jimmy 2, and you set up the robot so it's ready to be trained on data in such a way that that training would make it appear very human. And then you train it on the data of life. Like you let it grow up alongside Jimmy. Jimmy 2 is going to act exactly like mm-hmm. Jimmy. And Jimmy 2 is going to be able to look at your story. And, you know, this is hypothetical, the future of AI, perhaps it can do this. Jimmy 2 is going to be able to look at your story and say, you know what? This is good. And this is good because it's going to relate to you because of your experience doing this. And if we suppose that the light bulb does not have any awareness inherently, therefore Jimmy 2 is just a bunch of reactions, then it will have every appearance of life, whether or not there's anything in there experiencing it.
So here's where the difference is, I think. So Jimmy 2, you know, grows up, maybe Jimmy and Jimmy 2 both grow up, and they both grow up to be editors, you know, and they're helping okay. writers with their stories, right?
Uh-huh.
And the question is, well, Jimmy 2, when he sees something, it's not whether he can read it and say, oh, based on your history, I think this will be meaningful to you. It's when he reads it and it based on my history, this means something to me, or this sticks out to me. Is Jimmy 2 going to be able to relate experiences to his own personal experiences? Like that to me, because when you're talking about your, like, I think, therefore I am, right? It's like, I have this internal awareness of myself, and that I make choices based on that internal awareness. If an AI is able to do that, if they have an awareness of themselves and they understand that they can make choices purely for themselves, for their own benefit, at that point, you know, because Jimmy 1 and Jimmy 2, they may have been raised by the same family in the same place, but they're not the same, right? And it's not just because one is mechanical and one is real or organic, but also they've had different experiences, right? They've been treated differently by the world. And that to me is what really makes a life is what you experience and then how you internally change and respond to those experiences. But it has to be, like you said, it's not just about what you can provide to another person. It's about what is happening inside yourself internally.
Well, I'm going to draw up a couple of hypotheticals. Or, well, what about Steven Spielberg's AI?
Mm-hmm.
Was it called AI, the artificial intelligence?
Yeah.
Starring Haley Osment. And so there's that. And if I recall, he didn't know that he was artificial. Or if he did know, then let's take the Astro Boy movie. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't, but
in the Astro Boy movie, Dr. Tenma has a son named Toby, and Toby is killed in an accident. And Dr. Tenma has been building a robot, and he activates it and gives it all of Toby's memories. So then Astro Boy, the robot, wakes up and he thinks he's Toby. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's human. So I'll take those examples, but I'll even, I'll give the mechanics for it. Suppose you can emulate a single neuron. And I'm not up to speed on what biology and, robotics may have achieved here. But let's say you can make an artificial neuron that behaves exactly like a real neuron could be. And you take a bunch of those and you construct an artificial brain with all those artificial neurons. So it's all just a bunch of light bulbs turning on and off, right? Except they do so in a manner that perfectly emulates the human brain. So you take that artificial brain and you put it in the baby robot body and it grows up. And you, let's say your robotics even look like flesh. Okay. So like it goes through and is treated like everybody treats it like it's a human. They don't know the difference. So when it comes to being an editor, there's Jimmy one, there's Jimmy two. They've had different experiences, but that's just because Fred and George Weasley have different experiences. Mm-hmm. They don't share the same body. They are sometimes in different places at different times. I'm going way out on a limb here and I'm trying to catch up with myself. So Jimmy 2 might not do the exact same thing as Jimmy 1, but the interface with the world is going to be indistinguishable from those of a mm-hmm. human, a real human. It's just that we don't know it, but he's a robot and he's not made of the same components. So does he have that internal spark of awareness? I don't
know.
That's
the question.
I can't tell. So like if you shot Jimmy 2 and I didn't know he were a robot, I'd be like, that's murder.
Yeah.
If I found out he was a robot, I'd be like, that's Schrodinger's murder.
But if Jimmy 2, unknown, you know, grew up, Jimmy 2 has a relationship with Jimmy. Jimmy 2 has a relationship with Jimmy's kids. You know, they call him Uncle Jimmy 2 and they love him. And Jimmy 2 has a relationship with all of his writers that he works with. And they all, so when you shoot Jimmy 2, all of those people are still going to mourn. They're not going to be like, oh, you just turned off a light bulb, okay. You know, because, you know.
Yeah.
And so at that point, then it becomes about external validation. It's like, oh, well, maybe he didn't have whatever we think of as that internal spark of humanity, but he still moved in the world the way that and had an effect on people and is mourned like somebody that was a person. And once you get to that point, it's like, Where is the line that we're drawing, you know?
Uh-huh. And I'm not going to go there, but I'm going to say that I see a connection here. I can see some parallels with the abortion debate where some people suppose there is a person there. Some people suppose that there is not. Some people mourn that and some people don't. And so I think it's an intriguing question. If you know me personally, I probably would go, and I'm saying this to my podcast audience. I might go into that conversation. But that's not for here. That's not for now.
Yeah, this is a writing podcast. I would not put down that road.
Yeah, we're not here to get political. We're here to explore questions, and they are fascinating questions. Yeah. So
we could also talk about editing.
I was just looking at my notes here. So going back to the very beginning.
All right. I hope you liked that interview, and I hope the conversation was as interesting for you as it was for me. If you want to hear the other half of that conversation, again, go to December 28th, Season 2, Episode 24, the podcast. And before I sign off, I'm going to give you a little bit of... I'll just let you know what we have coming up next week. Next week, we'll have an interview with author C.R. Rowanson about magic systems and how they work in fantasy and in science fiction. And we had that conversation just yesterday morning. Yeah, yesterday morning. So it's recorded. I've just got to put it through a little bit of editing and watch for that next Thursday. Oh, there may be a bonus episode coming out on Monday, January 22nd. It's planned that I'll record it tomorrow morning or tomorrow sometime. But since it hasn't happened yet, I can't say it's solidly going to happen. But yeah, watch for a bonus episode on Monday, January 22nd, and then our next regular episode on the 25th. And catch you next time on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast.